The following programming is sponsored by Givnish Funeral Homes. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, around the Delaware Valley, welcome to the Givnish Spotlight Hour here on WWDB Talk 860. We've got a great show and a great guest. I'm going to bring in our host, Peggy Jansen of Givnish. How are you, Peggy?
Great. Thanks for having us, Joe.
It's always a pleasure, and certainly I'm ecstatic to bring in our guest, Maureen Anderson of Maureen Anderson Elder Law. How are you, Maureen?
Great. How are you doing today?
Fantastic. Maureen is no stranger to the broadcast, Peggy, and certainly, you know, a lot of great synergy here, great professional. If you would, talk about it a little.
Yes, thank you, Joe. Well, first, a huge shout out to John Givnish himself for allowing us this platform on the Givnish Spotlight Hour here at WWDB Talk Radio 860. As you know, as you said, Maureen is no stranger to the broadcast in that we had her on a few years ago because we have such great synergy together in that if you know anything about the Givnish family, we are not your typical funeral home. We're all about helping families before, during, and after their time of need, which the before is the huge part that we're going to focus on today with Maureen. And to that note, I'm going to turn it over to her to share about what she feels families should have in order and what services she provides.
Absolutely. Maureen, if you would, a little bit about yourself and about the firm.
Absolutely. My name is Maureen Anderson, and I am a certified elder law attorney. That is an attorney who works with families of seniors, getting all of their documents together, doing planning for long-term care, and obviously for wills, estates, those kind of things that we want to make sure everyone has things in place for. So what I like to do is work with the families and talk about getting documents in place.
What is the difference, if you don't mind me asking, about between a elder attorney or elder care attorney and somebody who just does wills and estates?
Sure. I do estates. Estates really includes preparing wills, powers of attorney, healthcare powers of attorney, and many attorneys do that on a general basis for people across the board that that need documents. An elder law attorney is someone who works more with long-term care planning, with Medicare, Medicaid, talking about nursing homes, talking about assisted living, talking about independent living, moving to a retirement community. All of these things, we talk about both the health side of it and the financial side of it, and the importance of having everything planned in advance. The more that we can plan in advance, the easier it is for everyone. That's namely for the individual, and secondly for their family. So for a certified elder law attorney, my focus, again, is that long-term planning, and I have the knowledge and the skill to sit down with an individual or a family and come up with a plan for what they need.
It's interesting. We talked about, Peggy, you mentioned the synergy. What I find amazing about what we're doing here at the table, it is a lot about planning. Okay, so many people, and when it comes to services, you know, funeral services, life celebration services, and of course, the issues that you're talking about, Maureen, people wait to the last minute, or they don't do it at all, and they don't prepare. And both of your organizations, one of the things that Givnish does, you have the pre-planning. You know, so that people are, prepared as best as you can. And it's really substantial. We've promoted this to our union community. But it's a big part of what you do also, right, Peggy?
Oh, let me just hit me there. It is a big part, Joe. And that's why I'm so excited to have Maureen on today because, you know, before the show, we talked a little bit about all of our personal experiences. And even though Maureen's an elder care attorney, and I've been helping as the benefit and resource coordinator for close to 30 years for Givnish, and you know what you do in spreading the works of good people. It's amazing how many people don't take advantage of what we do. And it's frustrating because here at the funeral home anyway, we do see families before, during, and after. But because my office is at a funeral home, I can't tell you how many times I walk past an arrangement room and I hear voices raised and yelling and things like that. And it doesn't have to be. Think about it. When you lose someone, it's the worst day of your life. And the last thing you want to have to do is then talk about, how are we going to pay for the funeral? Did mom have a will? Do you know what she wanted? You know, things like that. They're all things that could be taken care of had you put your ducks in order in the first place. And so, again, we're really passionate. We're not your typical funeral home. If we were, we would wait for the phone to ring and wait till you come in upset and tell you, hey,
education is a big part of what you do.
But we are saying to people, please take advantage of the resources we have. We recommend, you know, Marine all the time, and we have no direct affiliate. There's no kickback or anything. Like, we truly just,
I'd like to get one if it's possible for some reason.
We really do try to just, you know, build our relationships with like-minded people that we know are good people. Face it, if they have a bad experience with Marine, they might then think ill on us. So we wouldn't do that. And that's why we really, Marine is one of several people that we build relationships with that we can refer our families to, because we want to help you before you need us.
It's interesting, Maureen. Let me ask you this question, because, you know, as I hit the big 6-0, you think about a lot of the, and what Peggy was just saying, before it's too late, right? Wondering how many people, okay, push this off even. Next. So there's, you know, I'm thinking of two things. Suddenly somebody passes, okay, no excuse, but still, that was sudden. But I wonder how many people who potentially have a long-term illness and still don't do it when they, you know, like when, you know, when, you know, there was plenty of time. When people come into your office, okay, how many people, you know, wait till it's, you know, the last minute, or actually prepare?
I would say the bulk of my practice is what we call crisis planning.
Okay. Mm.
And crisis is when I get the call, mom's in the hospital, she had a stroke, she had a fall, and she's going to go to rehab next week, and she can't go home again. And what do we do? And that's when panic hits, and that's when crisis. So in addition to not having any documents in place, not having a will, not having a power of attorney, not having a healthcare power of attorney, everything is in complete shambles. From my perspective, the documents to have while you still are alive are even important. The power of attorney. I mean, this is the typical example where if you are in a hospital and you can't communicate with the doctors, and if you do not have a power of attorney, a healthcare power of attorney in place, no one can make decisions for you. And so we have situations where mom might be heavily medicated, might have early dementia, these kind of situations where she's not able to speak and cannot make clear decisions for herself. So in that case, if we don't have a power of attorney in place, the child now has to go to court to become a guardian for her parent.
So, having said that, let's break it down. First of all, I know there's no real rule of thumb, but let's look at this in this scenario. When should a person or a family start planning? And I'm talking about things are all great, no issues. You're getting towards a specific age, and you want to make sure when. Should a family start to, and a person, an individual, start making these plans and looking into the areas of elder care?
It is never too early to plan. Even if you're a young couple with small children, that's a huge responsibility that you have. What if something happens to both of the parents and you have two small children? Who's going to take care of these kids? You need to have a will in place. You need to specifically say who you want to be the guardian of those children. If you don't make that decision, a judge is going to make that decision. And a judge has no idea about your family situation, doesn't know anything about the people in your children's lives. So for you to spell that out is very, very important. Then I see many people now that unfortunately die at a very young age and thinking, oh, I'm not going to die for another 20, 30 years, and think, I don't need a will, I don't need to get my power of attorney in place, and unfortunately, tragedy happens, and they do. So again, now we're in a situation where someone has died, and we have no will. We have to go to file things according to the law now of who gets your estate. It's very complicated. And then the other big, big group is, again, seniors who really need to make sure their documents are in place. They've been putting it off for years. oh, I'm okay, I'm okay. My kids will handle it. They'll know what to do. Well, they would like to, but unfortunately, sometimes they can't. So if we have anybody, again, just any senior who doesn't have a will in place, a power of attorney in place, it's critical that they get that done. And even more so if anybody is hit with that crisis mode. If someone crosses the line with dementia and can no longer do their documents, we can't do that. So if there's any early sign of an illness or early sign of memory issues, let's get in immediately and get documents prepared so that you will be you'll have everything in place, all of your ducks will be in a row, and it's going to be easy for your family, for your children, for your doctors, for your financial planners, everybody in your family.
Joe, just to intervene here. Maureen, obviously, I'm looking at your brochure as well, and it says, Maureen Anderson, elder law. I don't want people to be misled by the elder, because you just said something very important, which is it's never too early. So I want to make sure that folks really understand, in my mind, there is no too early. The day, especially when you join hands with someone in marriage or have a child together, that's the time, like that's the starting point if you haven't already, right? Do you agree?
Correct.
And so even though in your title where, it says elder law, you are happy to help anyone.
Well, I imagine, so there's a lot, and we're going to get into the actual, we're going to break down kind of the services. But the education part is, so important. No one likes to think about it for themselves or for any situation, but you got to, great points. But when you talk about it's never too early, particularly for the wills and estates area. Like, in other words, everybody needs a will. Okay. As soon as you start getting assets
getting assets, I always tell people, ask yourself this question. If something were to happen to you today, car accident, illness, whatever, who would get the call? Would they know what your wishes are? Do they have the funding to pay for it? And most people say no, they don't.
Well,
and that's when you need to tap into the resources.
No question. And because we've done broadcasts on the issues, I said to Maureen before the broadcast, and I was only half joking. I could sit here and say, tell us what happens if you don't have a will. And I could leave and come back in 4 hours. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying the possibilities. And in a sense, in a lot of ways, it could create all kinds of issues for those you left behind, no question about it. And injustices when it comes to that, obviously including your children. But so we're going to get in, by the way, we'll get into that topic. So I'm assuming that is really... So if you're a 25-year-old couple and you have a child or two childs,
or a
two
house
children,
together, or a car,
exactly,
assets.
You should be getting. It's never too soon to get to have your will and all those things. In fact, it should be mandatory.
Yeah, and I find many times when I have the children that come in with the parents and we get all of their documents done, all of their planning done. At the end, the children come back to me and say, we're coming back to you because we don't want to do this to our children. We want to make sure that we have everything ready and ready.
Now, the question is, do they come back?
Many of them do.
I hope,
some of them.
I can't tell you how many of my family and friends say that, and I haven't seen them. And I only say it out of love and caring, because if you have been on the other side, as both of us have, and I'm sure Joe has experienced it, when you don't have things in order, what a mess it can leave. One of the sayings that we say here at Givnish is, with regards to our pre-planning, is leave your family, be a blessing, not a burden. And I say that because when you don't have things in order, I can't tell you the burden it leaves on the family.
No question about it. You can't even take money out of a bank account.
You're absolutely right.
To pay for
the
services.
Funeral. Yeah.
I mean, that gets extensive. We talk about the commitment to the community. Okay. A lot of these issues I've been privy to because I get the opportunity to be at this table, okay, and have, dialogue, okay, and we try, that's the point of the show, to educate the public. But
how do you get the word out about what you do besides the normal marketing venues?
A lot of it is word of mouth from other families that I've met. I have a lot of involvement with nursing homes, assisted living, and retirement communities. They all know me. I go out and provide educational seminars to them. I will host housing communities. Anyone that really wants an opportunity to learn, I'm happy to get out there and educate people and let them know what happens. I have a network of other professionals, other lawyers, accountants, financial planners, who all know that I specifically focus on my career, and I'm a great source to.
And you are great. And one thing I want to touch on is we here at Givenish, we're going to be, we have been doing since January, our lunch and learns at all of our 14 locations. Maureen has agreed to come to some of them and give a little bit of a talk to our families about her services. So I'm really excited about that. One thing I wanted to say, because we keep touching on that, it's never too early to plan. One thing that I feel would be great to be a part of, say pre-Cana Day, or when couples have to go and meet with whomever is going to be marrying them. I wish that this was part of the consultation, which is, you know, now that you're joining in unity and love, are you also realizing you're joining in unity and assets? And to that note, you know what I mean? And then go right into the conversation. I bet you'd save a lot of people heartache. And, you know, I think of one story in particular where, and I'm sure you heard it, it's the couple that got married, and they were headed, I believe, to or from their part, you know, the reception, and they were on a golf cart, and the wife passed and the husband didn't. You wonder, like, what emotionally, obviously, none of us can even, thank goodness, you know, fathom that experience. But even financially, like, they just were married. What happens? You know what I mean? So,
yeah, it's interesting because as you're talking as well, very interesting. So I do legal radio. That's a large portion of what I do. Mostly workers' compensation, because we have injured workers program with the union community, but mostly personal injury attorneys. And their clients are getting, especially, like, for example, on Monday, I'm going to be at Salts Mongoloozy Bendeski. Everything they do is catastrophic. So those attorneys, I mean, literally, you should be on speed dial with those attorneys, because most of the attorneys in my network, because you just mentioned people getting married and in your world, and I'm not saying I didn't think of it, but the fact of the matter is that people being educated, okay, and these attorneys only deal with catastrophically injured individuals. Some are not totally catastrophic, but it's all bad when that phone rings. So this information is so important, okay, for people to understand, and I absolutely get it, you know, but people shouldn't be waiting until catastrophic injuries happen, unfortunately, to have these information. You do seminars, and you said you go to
nursing homes
and stuff like that.
Retirement communities, assisted living, yes.
Okay, and even at that point, do you get a lot of people with a blank stare on their face going, I had no idea?
Absolutely. Many people just want to stick their head in the sand and think, I'm fine. Oh, that won't happen to me. I'll get to it. I'll get to it next week. And unfortunately, not everyone follows through on it.
No question about it. I'm not surprised. And by the way, you will be getting an email from me with my will. I'm not joking, because that's not a joke. I was saying to you that my son, my brother, get, you know, like, in other words, he gets custody of my son. My son's 38 now. Okay, it's going to be odd. I'm still trying to put him up for adoption. But anyway. But the fact is that it's such an area where people, I know we all know about it.
I know. I don't understand why it's so taboo, though.
You know what, like, it reminds me of? I'll tell you exactly what it reminds me of. In my world, okay, I do a lot of these radio shows, and we educate the public on a lot of different issues. Auto insurance and all those things where people just trying to save money until they get in an accident and realize that they had limited tort, and now that, you know, their catastrophic injury is a problem. Here I am.
Look at the money you could save if you have your affairs in order.
Well, let me say this. I'm talking about me. Finally, I said to my wife, I got to see my policy. I've been doing these shows for 2 to 3 years. I went and I got, you know, the best insurance possible. Why? Because here I am, the hypocrite of the century, doing these shows. And I feel like I'm in the same situation. I'm not joking. You're going to be getting my email this afternoon, because this is when I feel like I'm in you know, a hypocrite learning and advocating on behalf of individuals because you can see the issues. And we're going to get into the what happens if you don't have a will type situation. But before we do, go ahead.
Just let me jump in. It's when we're planning like that, part of what I do is I ask my clients to gather all of their information. And, for example, life insurance policies, retirement policies. All of these things go hand in hand with our wills and our planning. So it's a good opportunity for everyone to say, hey, who is the beneficiary named on my policy? How does that apply to my will? Is that going to go through my will? Is it going to go directly to my kids? So it forces us to address everything that's going on, not just preparing the will, but it's all of your belongings, all of your policies that surround it as well. So it's a good time to basically clean up house.
Sure.
And get everything organized because they all interplay with each other.
No question about it. So, I mean, and so this is, you know, I'll tell you how many people, you kind of mentioned it, Peggy. You know, you hear of wills and estates. Okay. But elder care law was new to me and didn't know those services were available. Okay. Even thinking it's a state of mind in a lot of ways. And it's an education point. How many people, when they find out, everybody's heard of a will, but not a lot of people. And we're going to get into these services in you know, right now, have never heard of the possibility of having somebody do the planning and look out for, you know, things they probably wait to do on their own with no resources possible. How many times when you are talking to somebody, are they like, I didn't even know this was possible?
I'd say probably at least half the people that I meet with.
No question about it.
And it's focusing on the elder law portion of it. In order to do this, this is a very, very unique field. As I say to people all the time, you have to have this in your heart, in your soul. I do not just spit out documents all day. I handhold with my clients every single day. I have people in my office literally crying every day. They come in, they are overwhelmed with everything, they think it's the end of the world. By the time we end the meeting, they're crying again with tears of joy, knowing that, hey, this isn't so bad at all. You've explained everything to me. I know we can do this. I know we can get everything in place. Let's get it done. And it's the world off of their shoulders.
So let's talk about the long-term care planning. Okay, what is that?
So long-term care planning is the possibility of someone needing care in the future. Okay, everybody wants to stay in their house, and everybody says, I'm going to die here. I'm not going to ever leave my house. I can take care of myself. I'm independent. You name it, fill in the adjective. They'll tell you that they're going to stay there. And unfortunately, in many cases, that's not possible. Oftentimes, it will be the event that will trigger it. It's the fall, it's the broken hip, the broken leg, the stroke, the heart attack. Something that triggers something where they have to get physical health care and cannot return to their home. At that point, we talk about what the options are. And in some cases, you can remain at home, but it means renovating your home. It means bringing in aides to help take care of you. It means having your family come up with a plan that they're going to contribute their time and their efforts to help take care of you. It could mean moving in with a child. It could mean building an in-law suite at one of your children's homes. It could mean you going to assisted living. It could mean possibly going into skilled nursing. All of these things are long-term care planning.
And how many people don't have, you know, I'm assuming the you know, you have the knowledge and the expertise and the resources to offer them the best options.
Correct. Ultimately, if someone's in a nursing home, the ultimate goal is to get someone approved for Medicaid. And that's a whole nother show that we'll do that will take another hour for that. But just know that there are things we can do to plan to preserve assets for the family, because you could have all the money in the world in the bank and they want you to spend that money down. So there are things that we can do to preserve that, basically give your children an early inheritance to preserve assets. So I'd say maybe maybe a quarter of my clients that come in for that purpose. Hey, we know about what you do. We know that at some point, you know, we might get sick. We hope that doesn't happen. But if it does, what can we do now to plan for that so that we don't go broke, so that if one of the spouses goes into a nursing home, the other one can still remain at home and live comfortably and won't be impoverished? What can we do? So those are the I'd say about maybe a quarter of my clients that come in fit that category. We're able then to do planning, to preserve assets, to get things to, you know, include put in their will. We're going to designate certain things and we're going to make sure the powers of attorney are in place. So all of those things can be done ahead of time and it will help with the long-term care planning. And of course, we have the other ones that come in when, as I said earlier, mom can't go home. She's going to be in a nursing home, and then it's a whole different story on the planning.
And to piggyback off what Maureen just said, and that's why we work hand in hand a lot, is Maureen is an expert at the things that she's able to help her families with. And we pride ourselves that one of the parts that we can help with is the irrevocable burial account. That is also where folks can put funds away to be protected so that they're not considered an asset in the eyes of Medicaid, and yet they are there for final expense purposes only. And so that's how we are able to help families, you know, protect asset in that way. Maureen's not going to give herself the true shout out that she deserves, so I'm going to do that. I may get a little emotional, and you may even cry too, Joe, because you know how we get.
But hold on,
I do have to share this story, though, because I'm really, 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 really hoping that it resonates with even one person out there, one listener, because if I can save them from some of the heartache that I personally just experienced, that would be terrific. And that is, this past May, my sister, sitting before you, like I'm healthy and happy, she was too. Had a yard sale with her. Everything was great. Long story short, she went to the doctor, and she was told that, you know, you need some routine blood work. It's been a while. She gets the routine blood work. They tell her, you know, you need a CAT scan. She gets a CAT scan. Day later, 2 days later, we're at an oncologist. Two doctors come in, two excellent doctors, and tell us, I'm sorry, there's nothing we can do. Her and I looked at each other like, what are you talking about? And they said, you have pancreatic cancer. And you probably, the life expectancy is usually 3 to 6 months. Well, of course, we drove home in silence. We got home, we cried, we laughed. We wrote a bucket list, the whole bit. And she was gone 2 weeks later. The reason I share that is, if you think that I thought I would have lost my sister this year, who was totally full of life, you know, not only my sister, but best friend, I can tell you, you'd be wrong, because I never in a million years expected that. The sad part is, just the July before, only 9-10 months before, she unexpectedly lost her husband, who was only 59. So if you don't think I had a conversation with her a million times to say, hey, Karen, I know it's not anything you want to talk about, but like, we never expected to lose your husband at only 59. Why don't we get some things in order? You know, you have three kids.
How
you have
old was your sister?
66.
Okay.
Actually, 66. So anyway, the bottom line is that everyone thinks they have time. So a million times she would say to me, I don't want to talk about it today. You're bothering me. And I felt like I was. So time went on, and then this occurred in May. So here we are. You know, now we're at the point that she's getting, within that 2 weeks, went very, very quickly. And at one point when she was hospitalized, I had to then call Maureen and say, help, you know, just what you don't want to do. And I feel embarrassed sitting in front of her, because I really did try. I really did try.
Nothing to be embarrassed
about. But Maureen didn't make me feel uncomfortable. She was like, all right, let's go. Like, what do we have to do? And documents went back and forth. There I was, though, at the hospital, had to get a notary to come up, had to get, you know, Maureen, and did it just the way that I tell our families all the time, please don't wait, don't do it that way.
Right.
My sister was weak. She, you know, luckily she was in her right mind, as you know, but it wasn't anything anybody felt like doing. You know, how do you feel when you're in the hospital? But yet we had to do it. And I'm so thankful we did. Unfortunately, I learned some more lessons that, you know, although we had a lot of details in place, it's the little details we talked about, like maybe time frames. Like maybe you say in your will, I want the house sold. Maybe you should put in there, I want the house sold within 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, because otherwise you leave a burden rather than a blessing. Because everyone doesn't agree sometimes when things should happen in different timelines, where if you spell it out, it's just a matter of handing over and saying, this is what mom wanted, or this is what dad wanted. So again, I just wanted to give that shout out personally to Maureen, because she really doesn't just walk, you know, she doesn't just talk the talk, she walks. Well, she really, really, really came through for myself and my family, and I am eternally grateful for that. But I share that story because I don't want people to wait.
Well, it's interesting. Part of, and I have this a conversation, which says a lot about yourself, Maureen, with our, you know, so we do it in the legal radio. We have, you know, it's amazing how you could be first in your class at Penn, but if you don't have the personal skills and the communication skills, you know, to work, you know, to work with your client base and accommodate them, that's a big part of, talk about, you know, kind of what Peggy's talking about, and, you know, what people can expect from you when they get that call. Because I've talked to attorneys who are so stressed out that they literally were leaving town. Like, you know, because, and unfortunately, a great attorney, it's not just about the law and understanding that, but it's about being accommodating. And you're also dealing with, okay, somebody at the worst. I thought personal injury situations were bad after catastrophic injury, but what Peggy just talked about is empathy and compassion, and so it's not just a finite situation.
Exactly. You have all those skills.
Well, talk about what people can expect, in especially in, you know, long term situations, but in something like that.
So again, as I briefly mentioned before, this type of practice requires a special individual who really has to love what you do.
I can
relate, going all the way back to when I was a child. I had an extremely close relationship with my grandmother. I was brought up in my family to respect my elders, to take care of your grandparents, take care of your aunts and uncles, your parents. That's how I was brought up. That will go with me till the day that I die. I have much respect for seniors, and many people don't, or just don't understand that. So that is literally what drives me inside. When I decided to become a lawyer, I knew even when I was a child I wanted to become a lawyer. I knew I wanted something along those lines. And as I got more into, through my schooling and education, this actually became a specialty. Elder law was not really a specialty,
right,
for, I'd say it's probably about 30 years or so now that it's been,
right,
an active profession. And I see people who do this, and every single one of them who are truly elder law attorneys, this is a very compassionate field. It's, as I mentioned, a lot of hand-holding. You have to be able to be patient with people and walk them through. Every client that walks into my office, it's the end of the world for them. In their mind, they're afraid to come in. Oh, this is, I don't want to do this. I don't want to have to face all of these issues. And my job is to very calmly and compassionately get them through it, say, okay, this is what we're going to do. These are your options. You know, fortunately, we have a lot of options. There's many people that don't have any options. And I'm going to hold your hand through this whole process. We're going to get you through it. And when it's all said and done, everything will be to your advantage. It's similar to, you know, a doctor. Either a doctor has bedside manner or they do not. You could be a great doctor and clinically can do things, but if you can't relate to your patient and you can't sit there and make them feel comfortable, I find that that's not
100%. I just want to ID the show. You're listening to Giving the Spotlight Hour here on WWDB Talk 860. We're here with our co-host, Peggy Jansen. Shout out to John Givnish for making this happen. And our guest is Maureen Anderson of Maureen Anderson Elder Law. And we're having a fascinating discussion. It's really a life discussion, okay? And it's about preparing, but also... not waiting to the last minute, and really, like,
being
responsible to the individuals around you and your children.
And
okay.
Yourself.
And so, having said that, special needs planning, what is that?
Special needs planning is another facet of what I do. Special needs planning occurs when an individual is disabled in some way. and they want to plan for their benefits, whether it be getting Medicare, Medicaid, housing, various things that help disabled individuals. And in many situations, there are asset limits on what you can have in the bank in order to qualify for these programs. So what we do with special needs planning is we'll set up what we call a special needs trust, where we talk about providing for what we call an ABLE trust, which is available, an ABLE account in Pennsylvania, putting money aside that will still enable the individual to collect all of their benefits and for the rest of their lives. Again, there's a lot of rules, a lot of planning that go with it, but in general, it's a tool. Getting back to what you mentioned earlier about working with all the personal injury firms, I do get calls from personal injury lawyers who are settling cases or a workers' comp case, whatever it might be, where their person is now considered disabled and can't have any money in the bank, and they just literally had a $1 million lawsuit settlement. So we can take those funds and set them up in a special needs trust for that individual so that that's the money they will have to live on for the rest of their lives.
What if somebody doesn't have a lot of assets? Okay, you had mentioned, and it's a totally different show, but Medicaid, Medicare planning. Is that where that comes in? A lot of times if somebody, is not as prepared as they should be?
Sure. So Medicaid is the program that the nursing, that we can get someone to have their nursing home payments. Right now in Pennsylvania, the average cost of a nursing home is anywhere between $12,000 and $15,000 per month.
Per month?
Per month. So if you have $100,000 in the bank, that's your life savings.
Yeah, you're done.
You can't even make it through a year. I mean, 6, 7, 8 months, your money is gone.
Yeah, I've always wondered that.
And then you would move on to Medicaid. So if we can do planning to extend that to either preserve some of the assets or do some planning to make sure that you will get on Medicaid in the future. A big thing we have is a married couple, a senior married couple where, again, they've lived together, they've shared income each month, and one of them goes to the nursing home. We don't want that other spouse to lose everything, to lose the house, to lose their retirement funds.
So there are ways that
there are ways we can do that, yes.
Okay, that is ridiculously important. I mean, at this point, just having that education, you can't do this.
And people, that's what upsets me more, or frustrates me more than anything, that people have no knowledge or no understanding that they can do these things. I can't tell you how many people have come to me that after 3 years or 4 years of paying for their husband in the nursing home, and they spent $12,000, $13,000 per month, and the wife is now broke, has just basically her house left, and that's about it, comes to me then to say, can you help us apply for Medicaid? If they had come to me 3 years prior, we could have probably saved almost everything for that wife.
How long does that take to actually make that happen once you...
In general, there's a 5-year look back for Medicaid to make sure that you haven't given all your assets away. But there's many exceptions to the rules, and there's many planning techniques that we can work with if you're less than 5 years. So just because your mom's going in the nursing home next week doesn't mean we still can't do things because you didn't do it 5 years ago.
Well, let's talk about Social Security benefits, okay? We've done a number of shows on Social Security disability, which also takes a long time. Okay, and and trying to do it yourself could double that period of time if you don't get it right. So when you're having these resources available, talk about Social Security benefits and what your role is in that situation.
So there's two parts. There's Social Security and there's Social Security disability.
Correct.
Social Security is the regular retirement fund that most individuals get. Depending on when you choose to start collecting, you can choose as early as age 62. For most people now, who are around early 60s, your age is 67 for full retirement. And if you wait till 70, you get a higher amount each month. So what we do sometimes is we look at the percentages and the numbers that you'll get at each particular age, and then you will decide, do I want to start collecting at 62, or do I want to wait till 70, or somewhere in between? So that's what Social Security is. And again, as long as you've paid into the system over the years, you will get that when you retire. If there's a spouse, and let's say the spouse has not worked, the spouse is usually entitled to about half of the other spouse's Social Security. So if husband worked and mom was a stay-at-home mom, and husband gets $2,000 a month, mom will probably get about $1,000 a month. Now, if dad dies, her Social Security rate will step up to what his was. Hers will go away, but she will then step up to what his was.
But will one of them go away, though? You don't get two.
Correct.
A lot of people don't know that.
Right. Instead of getting $3,000, she will now get $2,000,
right,
meaning her $1,000 is going to go away, and she'll step up to his $2,000. So that's basically what Social Security is, that, again, across the board, everybody is entitled to that. Social Security disability is the program in which if you become disabled as an adult while you're working, you can collect Social Security disability benefits. And that's what you had just referenced about trying to do that on your own. I don't do Social Security disability. That's, again, another type of attorney that does that. I refer them all the time to them because literally 90% of them are rejected, the applications.
Right.
If you have a Social Security disability attorney do it for you, most likely you're going to get it approved. The appeal process takes forever. Mm-hmm. The regular process takes forever. So when you add on a rejection and an appeal, it can take years.
Well, we've had a lot of Social Security disability attorneys on the show, and that can be a nightmare trying to do it on your own.
Right. Now, with Social Security disability, that is the program in which you've paid into. You have to work 40 quarters.
Your FICA.
So roughly 10 years you had to pay into your taxes to qualify for that. So if you do receive that, that's strictly the income that you've paid into. So you can still have money in the bank. There's no asset limit for Social Security disability. SSI, which is supplemental security insurance, are for people that have been disabled pretty much since birth or their childhood, and they really never were able to work fully. That's a lower amount of money that you get. That's the program where you are limited to what you can have in the bank. So those are the cases where we do special needs trust, usually for SSI. But if you have somebody who's on SSD and maybe gets Medicaid or some other program, they may have an income limit as well for the other programs. So it varies. But in general, SSD, Social Security Disability, you can pretty much have the money in the bank, do as you please, but SSI is where we focus on the special needs trust.
Is there a time where it's SSD transitions into Social Security?
Yes. At the age of 65, you flip over to regular Social Security.
And is it the same amount?
It varies for individuals.
Okay.
It depends on what you've paid into the system.
Okay, so having said that, we talk about there's a number of areas, okay, but we don't have a ton of time. When we talk about the wills and estate, okay, and I just want to finish up on that, okay. What we talk about that type of situation, I just want to talk about, and it's the things that, and we touched on them a lot, but what can happen to somebody? They may have a great family. They love their kids and all those things.
They just thought they had time and didn't take care
right.
of anything.
What happens if they did they did not pen that will
from
or
somebody
updated?
That has a small estate to a huge
right.
one?
Right. If I can just take one step back, let me just mention what those documents are, and then I'm happy to tell you if
Absolutely.
You don't have them in place.
Sure.
So the basic documents for estate planning are a will. The will is a document that when you die, who you want to leave things to, how you want to leave things, percentages to different people, to charities, to children, grandchildren, whatever you want. You name an executor in that will. The executor is the person that manages your estate after you pass away. So you want to make sure that's a responsible individual. We always name backups. I mean, in my practice, I have two or three backups. If something happens to your first executor and they can't do it, we want to have somebody else in place. Because again, we don't want to have to go to court and say, oh, that person died or that person is sick and can't do it. This way we just go right down the line. The more that we can put in there, the more detailed it becomes. And we compare again, as I mentioned, with your retirement funds. You might have an IRA that has a beneficiary on it. We'll talk about that and how that doesn't go through your will because that already has a named beneficiary. So the will is that main document that when you die, who you want to leave things to. Second document is the power of attorney for finances. And that is, in my mind, the most important document of all. If you do die without a will, there's some things we can do, but it's really critical to have the power of attorney in place. So while you are alive, if something happens to you and you cannot manage your affairs, you need to name somebody who will take over your finances for you. And that's your banking, your taxes, real estate, contracts, anything business or financial related. That's what the financial power of attorney is. Same thing. You name one person. If they can't do it, a backup and another person. You know, I normally do about three people in line. We can actually have joint powers of attorney. Sometimes people have, you know, two children. I want to name both of them. We'll do either or. So if one son can go to the bank next week and do my banking, and the next week he's away, the other son can step in and take over and do that. And then the third document is the healthcare power of attorney. And that, again, is very important. If you become ill, you're in the hospital, and you are not able to communicate with the doctors, you specifically say, I appoint this person, again, to make medical decisions, someone to step into my shoes if I need surgery, if I need a blood transfusion, if I need any kind of health care, and I'm not able to make that decision on my own, I name this person to do that. And the second half of that document is what we call the living will, and that is the end of life. If you have a terminal illness, the doctor says there's nothing else they can do to make you better. You indicate if you want treatments, ventilators, breathing tubes, feeding tubes, those kind of things that tend to just put people in a coma, state of coma, and have a vegetative situation. So in most cases, people don't want that. And then you also designate whether you want to donate any organs after you die. So those are the three serious documents that we have to get in place.
Okay. It's impossible for us to go. So here's a better way of doing it, because we only have a couple minutes left.
No,
okay,
it was the fastest hour ever.
You got that right. But and this is sort of like a general kind of, you know, hey, Mom, Dad, tell me about this. But I'm sure there are a lot of good people and families, and these situations, if not handled properly, can bring out the worst in some situations.
You can say that again.
This is, I'm sure you've been, you know, you lay witness to some scenarios that have been, I mean, as extreme as Peggy, you had talked about a couple of yourself, but how bad has it gotten? Okay. When, you know, and it's a general wide open question. You have 17 hours to finish it, but I'm just saying, give me some examples of
horror stories.
Well, you could say horror stories
that happen when things aren't in place.
Yeah.
So initially, again, if someone dies without a will, we have to then scramble around to figure out who's going to be the administrator. That's the first thing we need to do. An executor is the person you name in the will. If there's no will, it's called administration rather than the actual probate. So we need to find someone who's going to be the administrator. Again, it could be one of the children, it could be the spouse, it could be whomever, but the family all has to agree on that, because now we have to open up an estate with the county where the person passed away, and we have to say that there was no will and that they had these assets, and these are the next of kin. If you die without a will, there's a hierarchy of who gets your, if you're married, your spouse gets it. If you have children together, the spouse gets part of it, the children get part of it. If you don't have a spouse or children, it then goes to your parents. If you don't have parents, it then goes to your siblings. There's a whole hierarchy. So we have to go through all of that. We have to notify every single person in that hierarchy by law to let them know that an estate is being opened
up. Who's we?
Whoever is going to take over as administrator.
Hopefully, that's exactly where the trouble starts.
Hopefully, they're smart enough to go to a lawyer to have the lawyer do this. Okay, when I do this, it's boom, boom, boom. Yeah. You know, we know exactly what to do, and my job is to protect the executor, protect the administrator, that they come to me to hire me to do those tasks. So we file that, we get that all moving. Now, again, I see people that come to me for consultation and say, oh, I'm going to handle this on my own. And I'm like, okay, well, good luck.
Good luck.
Good luck with that. Because can't you just do this for us? I said, no, unfortunately, I can't. Either I'm going to help you do this correctly, I can't be responsible for any mistakes that you make when you run wild doing something that you think. And I also think it's important to have a lawyer do it, because it keeps everybody in track. I guarantee, you know, when I see the feuding families, which I see all the time, when they know that I'm involved or another attorney is involved, I say all the time, if your brother has a problem, tell your brother to call me. And 99% of the time, I will never get a call from that brother, because he knows now that we're serious about this. And so it helps the executor, the administrator, get through the process, because there's always that one squeaky wheel in the family. You're stealing money. You're doing this. You're doing that. You're not doing it right. Okay, talk to the lawyer. I said, I'm happy to be the middleman, the bad guy. I will take on all of the, and I will tell you again, 9 times out of 10, I do not hear from them at all. So we, you know, so again, we want to make sure that we, you know, walk through. But yes, I have seen people literally
never talk again.
I feel so bad because I think of the parent that just passed away.
And what does a parent want?
And the
just
parent
the
has raised all of these kids, and I'm thinking to myself, this poor mother would be appalled.
You're not kidding.
Appalled. I've heard, if she saw the behavior of these children.
I've heard nightmare stories where, say, a grandchild or a niece or nephew was there for that loved one, with, you know, for, I mean, the entire time, and two or three kids or one absolutely ignored it. They didn't even talk. And at the end, because there was no will, the you know, because of the automatic, for lack of a better term, layman's terms, pecking order that the state requires, it really caused, I mean, just and to the point where, Peggy, like you had mentioned, and I can't, because we only have 2 minutes left, mm-hmm. you had handled somebody's, a neighbor's estate, mm-hmm. never met the family, and they came in mm-hmm. and were rude to everybody. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that those situations are probably, I'm not going to say mild, but the scenarios are limitless.
Mm-hmm. I have a case right now where there was no children in the family, and so the individual left it to pretty much a helper of the family. She had helped them through the years. And she has just become so greedy.
Oh.
And I'm not kidding. Every week I get a call. When am I getting my money? When am I getting my money? And this
so
is,
sad.
You know, I see this. And it's, now granted, there's many people, many cases that are fine. And I deal with very good families.
Sure, absolutely.
Very straightforward. People are patient people. But there are people that are, that are going to try and cross the line, try and be bullies. So, but again, if we have those documents, your example of a, you know, eliminating a grandchild, for example, you have no obligation to leave everything to your children or your grandchildren, none whatsoever. I say all the time, if you want to leave your estate to the mailman, you can do that. So, but spell it out in your will to say, you know, it's going to these grandchildren, and my grandchildren in California, I don't even know them, never met them in my life. I don't want to leave anything to them. And there's no
question. How about, before we go, last one, probate and tax situations that people doing it on their own may have no idea. But, you know, maybe withdrew, you know, $100,000 from dad's bank account and have no idea of, or sell the house and don't, you know, don't have any idea about tax ramifications. Do you handle those things?
Yes, we do. The Pennsylvania inheritance tax is all part of the probate process.
But why should I have to pay taxes on I'm being sarcastic, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you probably heard that, you know.
There's no getting around taxes. I mean, what we can do is we can plan in advance to try and reduce the taxes. For example, in Pennsylvania, the general number is 4.5% of what you leave to your children, which is, again, most estates fall in that category. And if we take a bank account, let's say mom had a bank account of $100,000, we pay 4.5% on that. If while mom is alive, we add son and daughter to that bank account as joint owners, this goes back to also what we said earlier about if mom dies, kids can get their hands on that money literally the next day to pay for the funeral. They can have access to that money versus if it's just a mom's name alone, that account is frozen. Until we open up an estate, until we get the letters from the court, we can't do all of that.
You probably deal with that all the time.
It takes months to get that done before we can get into that. And in addition to that, now because that there's a joint owner on that bank account, instead of paying the 4.5% on the full 100,000, we're only paying 4.5% on 50% of it if there's one child, or 33% of it if there's two children on it.
Wow.
So those are the things, again, we can plan in advance to help reduce some of the inheritance
tax. You need to see Maureen.
We've come to the conclusion of the fastest hour on radio.
Yeah.
That was an incredible, I mean, we're at the tip of the iceberg, but mm-hmm. obviously we want to thank Maureen Anderson for being our guest, Maureen Anderson, Elder Law. I mean, Peggy, just a fantastic show.
Yeah, and like I said, my parting words will be repeated from what I said at the beginning of the show, which is leave your family a blessing, not a burden. Call Maureen Anderson, and she will help you start to finish.
Maureen, contact information for yourself if somebody wants to get in touch.
Sure. My office number is 215-595-2600. My website is MLA. That's M as in Mary, L as in Larry, A as in Apple, elderlaw.com. And you can just go to my website. You can shoot me an email from there. You can see all the things that that I offer on my website and just to learn a little bit more about myself as well.
Fantastic. Peggy, if you would.
Again, Givnish is here to help you. Life Celebration by Givnish. Thank you again to John Givnish for giving us this platform. We're here to help families before, during, and after their time of need. 1-800-448-6474. My name's Peggy Jansen, and thank you for joining us.
All right. I'm going to thank everybody for tuning in to the Givnish Spotlight Hour here on WWDB Talk 860. I want to thank our guest, Maureen Anderson. Again, John Givnish for making it possible. And, of course, my co-host and producer of the broadcast, Peggy Jansen, for doing a fantastic job, as always. On behalf of John Givnish, Peggy Jansen, I'm going to throw Dan Selecki in there. And of course,
Chris.
Maureen Anderson, I'm Joe Doherty. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you.